Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Awesome with Cody. The beginning of our March month has started, and we're going to do The Awesome Arts Of. And today, I am joined by a friend of mine named Daryl. Say hello, everyone. Daryl.
How's it going?
And if you would, Daryl, let all the listeners here know a little bit about you before we go into the talk.
All right. Good. Thanks for having me on the show, bro. I am a comic book artist. I work with Stranger Comics. I'm one of the executives there for Stranger Comics. We're an independent publisher. We specialize in like Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings style storytelling, but from like a Marvel or DC style universe. So reoccurring heroes and villains. And we also have a lot of cultural diversity in our comics. And I know a lot of the different publishers have been dealing with that in different their own ways, but we've done this very organically. I majored in cultural anthropology in college. I didn't go to art school. I made my grandmother frustrated with me. She asked me why I wasn't going to art school, and I said, "Grandma, I don't want to draw fruit." And the rest is history. So I concentrate on creating just good stories with authentic characters that reflect the world around us. So in our fantasy world and in our comics, it's not uncommon to see African-looking dwarves, Chinese gnomes, South American or Native American elves. You know what I mean? So it's very much a very baked and rich fantasy franchise. And I'm responsible for the initial design phase and development. I do write some of the stories with my writing partner, Sebastian Jones, who's a much better writer. I'm more of a story guy. And then I do all the designs, and then I even lay out pretty much all the titles we have, and then I do finish books as well.
All right.
Well, yeah, that's the gist.
That's the gist of it. So we'll start with a couple questions, and we can kind of divert from there. But the first main one is, how did you get into art? So what led you to the love of art and realizing how you could actually, you know, do the art that you do?
Well, I've always loved drawing, even as a little boy. I just remember, you know, drawing things and people going, "Hey, that's so good." And I got a lot of accolades, you know, as a little kid. Like, "Hey, that looks really good." And just drawing little superheroes and stuff, as little boys do. And then I want to say, as I was in grade school, I saw the movie RoboCop at a far too young age. I saw it in theater. It was great. It did wonders for my imagination. I mean, it led to me having drawing contests with other kids at school, to fist fights on the playground over how I could draw, like, just crazy little kid stuff, which I refer to as little kid apocalypse, where, like, the world's crumbling around you just because of the stupid things. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So I just kind of did that, and then I'm still friends with one of my greatest and oldest friends from kindergarten, my buddy Matt, and he does some of the shows with us on occasion. He runs a bookstore here in Ojai called Bart's Books, where I live, and he and I just used to spend hours reading comic books and drawing and listening to Soundgarden and Primus, you know, just those 90 kids, just rather than, and I played sports, but rather than getting drunk all the time and chasing girls, I was chasing crosshatching and monsters and X-Men and Excalibur and Spider-Man and Spawn. I mean, we stood in line for hours just waiting to have Todd McFarlane sign our Spawn and our Spider-Man issue ones we had that he drew at like the age of 12 or 13. And him just bad-mouthing Marvel and just thinking, "This guy's the most amazing thing. I love the X-Men and Spider-Man, but he's bad-mouthing it, and he's so awesome." You know, just all those things, the excitement of standing in line for hours just to get your book signed by someone you respect. That's a huge component to why I do what I do today. I love it. I have the ability to do it. Just guys like Jack Kirby and John Byrne, like, they're just what they've done for comics. And for me, just knowing that some of my heroes, you know, have given me the tools to do what I love, you know. So I would say that's how I got started. I did have a brief stint when I stopped drawing in college because it became more about girls and bands than more than art. And then when the economy crashed in 2008, I was in the mortgage business doing pretty well. But I was drawing at that point again, hanging out with Sebastian, playing D&D. And we decided to make a business out of our gaming, our sessions. And we know some people in the business. And so we're like, let's try this. And the rest is history. For the last decade or more, I've just really honed in on this. But I even started before that with Seb. You know, so a good 15 solid years, I've been working on making my art a career.
Nice.
I would say. Yeah.
You touched on this a little bit on that, but the next question would be, who or what were your main inspirations? Would you say were your main inspirations for your art?
Well, yeah, I touched on that a bit. Obviously, Jack Kirby, I love what he's done. And I mean, dude, today's February 15th. The world is freaking out right now about Black Panther.
Yep.
You know, he contributed to that. He's the creator of that with Stan Lee. And to see so many of my black friends and fans of what we do so excited about that, my excitement is just amplified by that. I'm to see a superhero film like this, and I know we've seen Blade, we've seen other characters, but man, the press is in and it is magic. So I attribute that to a lot of factors, and you know, Jack Kirby being one of the people responsible for that. So you can't kind of deny that. But when it comes to comic creators and different artists and people I respect, I have some fans of different specific writers that I really like. I'm a big Ed Brubaker fan. Gotham Central is an amazing run on Batman, and I hate the television show because of it.
Yes.
Willingham, I'm a big Fables guy.
Me too.
Yeah, I love Fables. I have all the volumes in hardcover now, and I cannot watch Once Upon a Time or Grimm because those are just bastardizations of it. It
makes you so mad, right?
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. It's like, give them $200 million a season and let them do it right.
Yeah.
Make it like a Disney film with computer animation. But anyway, so guys like that are more modern. I'm a huge Spider-Man guy. I'm a huge Spider-Man and Batman guy. I don't boo-hoo Darren Slott like a lot of people do. Yes, he's made mistakes. Every Spider-Man writer out there's made mistakes. Are there some stories that I think are phenomenal? Yes, I loved Superior Spider-Man. It ended poorly.
Yeah.
on a lot of levels, but I just like what they're creating. Like, a lot of people didn't like Secret Empire. I enjoyed it. You know, I'm easy to please is what my friends say. They give me a lot of shit when it comes to watching Star Wars and stuff, and they just make fun of me at the D&D table, and I take it in and just laugh, and I keep bringing it up so the razzing continues, you know?
Of course.
So I would say, like, George Lucas and even Peter Jackson and Alan Lee and John Howe, the initial designers of the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit films, especially the Lord of the Rings, such a classic take on art. Like, I remember sitting in a panel with John Howe saying he wants to scream at anyone that uses anything harder than a 6B pencil lead. And I draw with an H2 or an HB, you know, when I'm doing my regular sketchbook stuff. And it's like, I understand that. I understand the traditional school he's coming from. Am I learning by watching his process? Yes. And I respect it. Do I do exactly what he does? No, I don't. So there's a lot of different things that inspire me and different creators that I enjoy. But I would say pretty much anything Spider-Man related, I'm going to pay attention to whoever's writing it. I'm one of the hopeful types. I hope Nick Spencer gets on the book for Spider-Man. I just don't know. You know, it hopefully changes. Change can be a good thing, you know. So, yeah.
I agree with that.
That's all I'll answer that one.
All right. I completely agree with you on Fables, actually, on this, on my podcast here. I actually talked a little bit about Fables and how I want them to make it into a TV show. And it definitely needs to be animated just because you can't do what needs to be done with those characters, especially with Bigsby Wolf. You just can't do that with a human being.
Imagine shooting that with like guys like, I know the Game of Thrones guys are going to be doing Star Wars soon.
Yeah.
But imagine doing in the Burrows, do Fable Town in New York and have it be shot in New York and then just computer animate like it's Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Go to the farm, computer animate. You know, maybe bring in some real animals, you know, and animate them like it's Babe, you know, the little pig movie, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that can be done technologically, but that is very expensive. They more than enough have the means. Even if they did a series, like a trilogy of films.
Yeah.
I think, and I know they would leave out a lot if they did that, but I think there's a take. If you were to ever give David Fincher a comic property to work on, I would give them Fables.
For sure. Oh, for sure. It'd be ridiculous.
Imagine Seven. Seven or Zodiac, or, you know, like his new show on Netflix, the
Mindhunter. Yeah.
Watch that. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So on your career within comics is fairly newish compared
yes,
to
yes, very
many.
Very much so.
Can you tell our listeners about your past projects? I know you've had a few books that you and Sebastian have done. Can you describe a little bit more? You did a little bit, but tell us a little bit more how they came about.
Yeah. It all started with The Untamed. Seb handed me a huge script that was unfilmable. It was like almost 260 something pages. And we started talking like, this is awesome. It's everything we love. This is unfilmable. We can't do this. So Seb and I and some other friends of ours kind of brainstormed some things, and we were playing D&D, and then Seb came to me and was like, hey, I've got this idea, blah, blah, blah. And he called it The Untamed. And I'm like, yeah. So we talked about it. He talked with another friend of ours, Chris, about everything that we're thinking about doing with this. And he's just started writing a screenplay. And so The Untamed came about, and he showed me Peter Berkting's artwork. And I was really, 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 really not very good with my art. Like, yes, I had ability, but it hadn't been honed, and I had a lot to learn. And so bringing Peter to the table, we both flew him out and we met with him, and they laid out pretty much the first issue. I did a few of the layouts on the first issue. Peter left. I kind of learned from what Peter was doing. And I did the rest of the graphic novel issues 2 through 7 on layouts. And Peter would then finish it in Sweden. So that was kind of my learning curve. And just with every issue, I got better. And then I obviously could do like concept design work and design things. And some of it was really rough, but I've just gotten, of course, better with it. And then we did The Untamed. Then we did Dusu. We've done children's books along the way. We've done a few service gigs along the way. We started Arathune. And then Sebastian... then met with Amanda Stenberg to talk about the Niobe property, because, you know, it's important. It's one of the things, like, I was talking about earlier with diversity, is like, we hired Ashley A. Woods, a young black woman, to draw Niobe. Why? Because that's the right thing to do, you know. And I can draw Niobe, I can draw different stuff. I laid out that book and gave and directed Ashley on what to do with that, but we wanted to make sure it was done organically. And Sheldon Mitchell is a Jamaican friend of ours who draws Arathune, a story that I came up with hey, Seb, I'm going to get out of your way. You write this. So Seb wrote it, even though it's my story, a lot of my characters and stuff. And it's the same thing. I'm writing Rise of the Jade Lord right now. Seb created the character of Sin in the Niobe series with, Mandla on that one. And it's like we just come up with these different ideas, and I'm writing that character's origin. Whereas I created a character in that series that Seb's now writing, and She Is Death, the sequel to Niobe. You know what I mean? Gotcha. So it's been this progression of creating an Avengers-style universe for fantasy. Because I ask people, it's like, you love Conan, but how do you relate to Conan? You know, his villains are dead, and it's a one-shot. Very Set, is it? James Earl Jones' character, you know? And is all I can really think of as far as a Conan villains concerned, you know. And we're trying to brand heroes and villains and make conflicting villains and really horrific villains, and there's a lot that we do continuity wise with our stuff. So it all kind of started there. It all began with The Untamed. Obviously we have a sequel to that book as well, all books that I laid out. And people that pick up the Niobe hardcovers right now from us, 52 pages of that is what I call our car chase. And it's literally Niobe as an infant being hunted by Morkamoa, the villain in the Niobe series, somebody I created, Morkamoa. And Niobe's an infant. Well, that's the first 2 chapters of 6 chapters in Rise of the Jade Lord. I'm on issue 5 right now of 6. So I'm hoping to have, between my con schedules to other projects, like I've got a project called Ruining Christmas I'm a co-writer on that my friend Eli Hicks is drawing. It's a buddy bromance with Christmas elves. Think The Hangover, you know, with Christmas elves kind of thing, but much more catastrophic and violent. So he's drawing that. Why? Because he's the perfect artist for it. You know what I mean? Like, he's got the sensibilities that Scotty Young has. I'm a huge Scotty Young fan. Mm-hmm. I wanted Scotty Young to draw the project, but obviously he's so busy doing what he does, and I don't know the guy. I can't use him. And I could do a version of Ruining Christmas, but my friend Eli is going to do a better version of it. You know, and Seb wrote a British pass on the script. It reads like a Guy Ritchie film. It's fantastic. I couldn't have done that. You know, so with all the projects that we manage, at some point, Seb and I and Josh go, Daryl, you're not drawing this one. Someone else is. Or finish that one, and then we'll figure out what the right project for you to finish is. I, as the art director and CCO, chief creative officer, I have to let my babies go. And that happens. It's, you know, it's, and on multiple levels, we have irons in the fire with other artists that I don't really want to talk about right now, but it's until it becomes much more tangible and real. You know what I mean? Gotcha. So, yeah, it's, that's the process, man. That's where it all started. The Untamed. It's where I broke my compositional ground, I should say.
All right. And actually something you said about Scotty Young. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Scotty Young fan.
He's
amazing and he's hilarious.
Yeah.
I Hate Fairyland so much because it's just,
yeah,
it's not only just a satire of mm-hmm. other things, like, you know, fairy tales in general, but yeah. he's able to write in a real story about this little girl struggling with her real feelings.
Yes.
But in his most object, just ridiculous, over the top
way. He has full capability. I say this to a lot of people. You've got $1 billion of production value in your hand when you're holding a pencil and a piece of paper. So go to town. He has complete control of that universe. His imagination is his boundaries. That's what I love about that series. You can just, and you know, like, I design things all the time, but I'm a little trapped within some constraints and walls that me and my team have built for a reason. You know, some projects you can just, let it flow without having to think, maybe that guy shouldn't have six arms. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Scotty has the ability to do that with that series, you know, and it be organic and not be contrived or seem forced. You know,
definitely.
It's a lot of fun. I love the freedom that he has on that project.
For sure. So the next question, kind of goes off that, what is one creator you would love to do work with?
Well, I know we've been talking with Jay Lee on one of my big projects, a fairy tale project. I'm not quite sure where we're at the moment. Obviously he's one of my all time favorites. But with Stranger, if I was to work with somebody on a project with the Stranger confines, I would want to pull in Oliver Copiel.
Okay.
For a Niobe story. I think he would kill it. His Storm, his characters, the way he draws, obviously you've seen his Thor, seen his Spider-Verse stuff. He's just amazing. And I think he's the right guy for a Stranger product. And as far as a Stranger style thing that I would want to see done would be to work with Oliver Copiel, or even like a guy like Jim Chung, who's doing 2-in-1 right now. The thing would be cool just to see like a hardcore Marvel or DC artist like that.
Yeah.
Produce one of our properties would be really cool. And if I were not doing Stranger stuff, and I was to like work with somebody, I'd want to work with a guy like maybe Jerry Conway and do a Spider-Man story, like a one shot, you know, just to see if I could do it.
Gotcha.
And I would want to draw it, you know, like, so just little things like that, like work with a legend writer that, you know, is getting up there, you know what I mean? Something like that would be fun, I think. But obviously doing Stranger stuff encompasses all my time, you know, so, and I like building things that I own a piece of. You know, it's rewarding.
Yeah, it gives you that sense of freedom and and the control that you don't get at one of the bigger houses.
Yeah,
when you're working. Yeah, with
and I'm a
else.
Big fan of Asad Ribic too. I mean, it's just imagine that guy drawing my character Morkamoa, a story of Morkamoa, or Buxton Stonebeard. You know what I mean? The sequel to Erethune. To have a guy like Asad Ribic do the sequel to Erethune, you know, which Erethune, by the way, is the Sheldon Mitchell has knocked it out of the park on that. I've seen the final pages of art completed. It's in post-production right now. That'll be coming out very, very, very soon.
Nice, nice.
Yes, I'm really happy about that one. Based off a D&D adventure I ran over 10 years ago, so.
Yeah, very nice, yeah. So I guess this is, you kind of answered this next question a little bit. But what character or title would you love to work on if you got a shot? You've got, someone saying, came to you and said, hey, the door's open. You can come into our treasure chest and pluck out any one character or group or title, and you make it your own. What would you do?
If I could, because I like what I do with Stranger, like if I could do some like, and had the time, you know, I would love to do Spider-Man at some point, you know, and I would want Spider-Man to beat ass in his own book, not get help from anybody. Yeah, there would be supporting characters, but no one's saving the day except Spider-Man. I felt like that's been kind of missing for a long time. I've had ideas for Batman stories as a kid, you know, and growing up and stuff I'd like to do. I'd love to do Batman. But my real passion, though, is with what I'm doing now, you know. But if for whatever reason I wasn't doing that, I'd want to crack at either Batman or Spider-Man. But it's takes a lot to get there. You know, I'd have to do some one shots, I think, and see what I was capable of.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. There's some very impressive artists out there, and a lot of people are quick to jump on their books at times in a negative way. And I'm like, dude, sit down and look at that page. And I can tell you how long this took me in a day to do. This easily took them like just to segue a little bit. I've met Sergio Organis, the Gru, the Wanderer. He lives in my hometown. And I bumped into him printing up artwork a few months back, and I was talking to him about his art process, and he's like, "How long do you think this took me to do?" In his accent, and he's like, "Almost 80," and I was like, "I don't know, a couple of days," and he's like, "It took me all month." And there was like little guys running up the mast of a ship, and these temple scenes, and he said he would come back to the pages. He would finish pages and then come back to them. This is a guy that holds the world record for, you know, fastest cartoonist.
Yeah.
And it's like, people would just look at that and be like, "Meh, I could do that." And it's like, "Nah, no, you can't.
No.
You have no idea the level of the," and I told him this, "the years of cultivating his style, of his ability." You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then so keeping the consistency of characters in that image, too.
Yes, if anyone's, just consistency alone, man. Yeah, oh,
like
my God.
Anybody who's ever seen Gru stuff, there's so much. It's like a Where's Waldo
of
just stuff. And he throws in every little bit, and there's like these things that you see, like these characters that you don't meet for like five pages in, are on every single page leading up because he's in a village or he's, you know, whatever. And you see these and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, if you're really looking, I saw this character in the background on every single page leading up to this. And I could literally watch him walk from the background all the way up past these, all these characters, and then interact with Gru and then disappear back in the background for the next three pages.
It's insane, bro. Yeah. It's insane. So with that being said, I understand that if I were to get an opportunity to work with a character that I've never drawn before, there's a level of respect for those that have come before you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of how I'd answer that one.
All right. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's a valid point to it. And then to my last question, and I'm going to guess I know some of this, but I'll let you talk about it. What else besides art do you do to keep yourself sane? I know you guys do a lot of D&D. Yeah. We talked about Pathfinder and stuff when we were hanging out at Comic-Con in San Diego.
Yeah.
But what are some of the things you do outside your art on a daily basis or weekly basis?
I obviously hang out with a few friends that I've reconnected with here in the Ojai area where I live. Just good buddies, like my buddy from kindergarten, and I've joined their D&D group every Wednesday. It got switched to Thursday this week. We're going to game tonight. But it's a way for me to just kind of let loose, put what little hair I have left down. You know what I mean? I love music. Music's a big part of my life. I jam on guitar here and there. But I listen to a lot of different music, everything from a ton of like metal, like really, really obscure metal, like got bands like Meshuggah, Converge, Dillinger Escape Plan, like a lot of that kind of stuff, to guys like Damian Jurado, like singer-songwriters, Radiohead. I'm a huge Tom Waits fan. Just music in general keeps me zen. You know, and I'm single, I don't have children, so I'm trying to get out more and meet lovely ladies and, you know, just live life and not get so buried in my work, because it is very easy. I know I spent December and January, there was a bad fire here up in Ojai, in the Ojai area. You probably heard about those awful California fires. And I know family members and friends who have all lost homes. Like, it's very surreal when you're like, wow, I almost lost everything. Yeah. You know, and it came pretty close to where I live. You know, it puts things in perspective. And, you know, I spent December and January juggling that while finishing my fourth issue of Rise of the Jade Lord. I did nothing but draw and do the holidays and dodge fire for those months. So I feel very fortunate to live in a place where I can just sit and look out the window and see mountains and draw.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of a window into my personal life. But yeah, just hanging out, meeting new people, reconnecting with old friends. It's a lot of fun, you know.
So on the D&D thing, I used to play D&D a lot when I was younger, and kind of fell away from it when I got further into high school, because, you know, it's not as cool as you imagine it would be. Mm-hmm. How intense do you guys get with your stories? Like, do you ever DM, or are you more of just a player character?
In the past, my D&D group now, I just show up and get slaughtered.
Gotcha.
I'm on my third character in Tomb of Annihilation. We're playing in Chult 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, so you guys are full turn, lose a character, start over.
Yes. On okay. some level, these are my other friends that I know up here in Ojai, and we played it on meat grinder mode. So it's a lot of laughing, smoking, and drinking kind of stuff. Gotcha, I don't I don't drink or smoke, but it's people just letting their hair down, you know what I mean, and having fun. But they're also my buddies are building a world and stuff, and I help them out with that as well. But when it comes to Sebastian and I and my group of friends, that have been gaming for years, and we haven't been as much because of how busy we are turning our gaming into a business.
Yeah.
Like the character of Niobe's that Seb created, and Scarlock and Buxton Stonebeard are all characters Sebastian created and roleplayed essentially. But like very specifically, the Untamed is a kind of like a Fistful of Dollars, you know, High Plains Drifter kind of story, where the second issue in that, elements of that, just a few elements, are from a game I ran. It was an espionage campaign where everyone was playing rogues and assassins and thieves. Seb was a player in that game. And during the time of the writing of The Untamed, I was running the game. Seb's been the DM most of the time, but some of our content that we've created, like Arathun, was a game I ran for my buddies. And some of the characters that my buddies played didn't make the cut. A lot of people, when they, like, I have a D&D adventure, I want to make a comic of it too. Well, if you were to, like, sit down and say, make Lord of the Rings as a film per page, per line, it'd be a friggin' brutal, brutal thing to witness.
Oh, yeah.
Or be a part of. You have to change things for the story narrative. You have to change it. So Seb played Buxton Stonebeard in Arathun. I created Morkamoa. It was under a different character name, the orc. I called him Arog, which is too close to Azog in The Hobbit. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I was like, let's just make it Morkamoa, which was another character I had created around that time. And so we just changed the name because it was a really cool name for a Grachuk, a great orc. So Seb brought in Buxton, and other friends of mine played different characters. Like my buddy Kenny played a barbarian. That barbarian, Kenny's face is actually on one of the barbarians in the fourth issue.
Oh, nice.
You know what I mean? So it's just like we've taken the thread, my story thread of this game was very much what the story of Arathun is. Some very major beats and villains and characters that I created, but Seb came in, altered the story to be more cinematic, and change some names of some characters, add some characters, strip away some characters, you know what I mean? And now we've got this really cool Avenger title that Niobe's leading the charge on, fighting a villain that she fought or she was on the run from as an infant and then fought as a teenager. Now she's an adult woman with Buxton and Scarlock kicking this guy's ass one more time. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's reoccurring heroes and villains. And my D&D with Seb brought that about. Like, our gaming is much more serious. I had characters that would last for 2 years. Whereas my group game here on Wednesday nights, I'm on number 3, close to number 4, let me tell you. So we just, it's a different type of gaming. It was a much more serious, invested character type. We would really spend the time to make sure our characters were as good as they could be. And it's a character I wanted to spend my time playing, you know, not making stupid decisions like being a goblin and pissing on the tavern table first encounter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, me and my friends, when we, especially in junior highs, we really got into it.
Yeah.
We would do every weekend. We'd go to, you know, this a lot of people out here don't know what Godfather Pizza is, because being California, we have large pizza chains that no one else has heard of.
Yeah,
and Godfather's being one of them. But they would do like, you know, their lunchtime buffet on a Saturday, Sunday. We would go there for hours and sit in a booth and play this continuous game that would last, you know, all summer, sometimes almost a year long, where these characters keep going through more and more. And it was just like, it brings me back. And it's funny to think that those are the stories you did just as a fun game. You've created a career out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we've been talking to the Pathfinder guys. We've got some Niobe module stuff we're working on for the Kickstarter. I did a bunch of that work. And now I need the Pathfinder guys to just hammer it, essentially.
Yeah.
But if they asked us and we had the time and resources, we could create an Asunda player's book.
That'd be pretty amazing.
Yeah. And we'd have different different creatures and whatnot. But we have very specific player races, archetypes, and feats that we could bring to the table on a 3.5 rule system. So these are all things we're exploring, but I can say that role-playing games were a huge component of my youth and into my adult life, which has actually brought me a career that potentially could be something very large in the near future, hopefully.
Yeah.
So
I know you guys got a lot of stuff going all the time, so that's it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of that, since it brings us to the end here, I'm going to roll out the red carpet, per se, and give you a chance to let the listeners know where to find you, where to find your stuff, and then what you got coming up here, where they can maybe meet you at different conventions and things like that, if you want to go ahead and do that.
Awesome. Yeah, we can be found at strangercomics.com. We are on Instagram, you know, Twitter, and Facebook. My personal Instagram is Daryl May Art. DarrellMayArt. You can find me there, and I regularly post progress on projects. I don't have a huge following per se yet, but I do have a lot of art that I post and get a lot of comments and different things. We are going to be at Emerald City Comic Con, so if you are in the Seattle area, we will be there. I think it's March 1st. It's the first day of the show. And then we are going to be at WonderCon in L.A. as well in March. So we're going to be busy beavers. And I know we're going to have a presence at Chicago, C2E2, and L.A. Festival of Books. And it's looking like we're going to be at both Phoenix and Denver. That is May and June. Right. Those are the big ones. And we're still waiting to figure out what is happening for us in July for San Diego.
Gotcha.
So, it's a lot of moving parts, you know, and a lot of little local events here and there. I did a signing at Hypno Comics of Ventura. Check out hypnocomics.com. A good buddy of mine, George, has got his online retailer store. It's a lot of really cool things happening. A lot of difficult times for people with the storms and certain economics. The economics of being in the comic business are very extremely difficult. And I would, you know, just would advise people to get out and go buy at their local comic shop and support online retailers as well, you know, people like me and, you know, Hypno. So yeah, that's what I suggest and what I got to say.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for joining me for this little get to know thing.
Yeah, man.
We can do again in the future when you got something coming up.
Absolutely, dude. Anytime you want to talk, you know, I know that I'm pushing for maybe doing a Kickstarter in August for Rise of the Jade Lord. But obviously, I tend to not think about tomorrow. I'm going to live for the now, like right. Garth Brooks and Jesus said, live for the now. You know,
there you go.
Or not Garth Brooks, but Garth from Wayne's World.
Yeah,
live close for enough. The now.
Yeah, yeah, all right. Enough. Well, I guess that's it for this episode. Again, I want to thank Daryl for joining me on this little adventure of ours. And I guess I will talk to everyone next time on The Awesome with Cody. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Daryl.
You got it, man. Bye.